Okay, thank you. I'm delighted to be here. So my name is Paul Cleverly from Robert Gordon University. Unfortunately, Laura can't be here today. I'd like to share some of the results of our research looking at automatically applying a knowledge organisation system, a dictionary, to a corpus of text, in this case annual reports, looking to forward-looking sentiments, so strong and hesitant views as, towards the state of affairs from organisations, to infer organisational social phenomena and to predict business performance. I'm a geologist by background, so I always like to have something to do with geology in a presentation. So the way I like to think of applying knowledge organisation systems automatically to text is a bit like a lens that can uncover trace fossils, whereas the patterns in words that are left are not random but in some way deliberate, and we can postulate what may have occurred in order to see the patterns that we observe. There's a lot of animation here, so I'm going to be hovering around the middle, so hopefully I won't block anyone's particular views. Okay, so a little bit of review of the literature, some gaps, then come on to methodology, talk about the results and discuss each in turn, and then summarise with conclusions. So the library, an information science discipline, or some people would argue is a collection of methods in some places. Scholars say it's been a bit slow to adopt some automated methods, and traditionally, particularly in the workplace, been looking at manually cataloguing containers of information. Perhaps not so much a focus looking at automated methods, but also looking at the whole collection aggregate, where there may be patterns that exist in the collection that are not present in any single particular document. The information retrieval discipline, much more technical, is looking at meeting a user's intent or query to a particular set of documents, quite often removes words during the indexing process. These are called stop words, and they can be quite useful if you're trying to find sentiment in text. So words such as might, could and will that can give indications about how an organisation or person feels about the future state of affairs are often removed, which would be problematical if you're looking at sentiment. So text and data mining, or TDM, is a broader discipline. Sentiment analysis could be considered as one process within that. And there's various views around the excitement, I think, of big data or big literature and how much information there is there to look at intent and people's behaviours with that. But there's also perhaps a little bit of hyperbole around commercial tools and how well they can detect sentiment. And there's likely to be customization, perhaps hinting at the importance of knowledge organization techniques. It's been reported, this is just one example from the American Red Cross, for example, that used a very well-known commercial tool to detect positive negative sentiment and found that only 21% of positive comments that they knew that were there in their training set were detected by the tool. So likely to be tuning that's required rather than just you can plug something in and it works straight away. So content analysis, I'm sure, is a method that most of you are aware of. It sort of cuts across, used by many different disciplines, of being able to, in a replicable way, infer meaning from texts, traditionally through reading each individual text, and then inquiring some way, some social reality from that text. Increasingly being used by management or organisational scholars, only really in relatively recent times, people have tried to tie word patterns to structured data such as financial accounts to look at patterns. And one of the challenges is what sometimes is called proxy dictionaries, so coming up with a dictionary that represents the construct that you're analysing. So with all this information, automated content analysis become much more popular. I just picked this one example from an oil and gas company that had a lessons learned system, and they estimated it would take an individual 5 years to read through all their lessons learned documentation. So clearly some of the manual methods that may have worked in the past will struggle in these volumes. There are a lot of unsupervised algorithms that have been out there for some time, with libraries that you can use with open source tools that do unsupervised clustering, such as topic modelling, such as word vectors, and they all work relatively at a high level on the same thing, which is complex word co-occurrence. So you're not putting in any knowledge information, you're letting the text emerge from it, latent patterns, and you can get some differentiating insights from that. But there has been a shift from pure statistics to a little bit more linguistics, taking note of things like word order. So take these two examples here. The iPhone is nice but expensive. And then if you just tweak the word order a little bit, the iPhone is expensive but nice, you can almost flip the polarity of those sentences as they refer to the iPhone in that case. Michelle et al. Published a study that really coincided with the Google Books initiative, which indexed about 4% of the world's books. And in the Engram viewer that any of you have used, I'm sure some of you have used in Google, you can type words and you'll see over time how that word has increased or decreased in frequency throughout the last 100 years or so. And they use this term culturonomics in not just looking at frequency, but also how cultures, different nationalities as well, may use words in different ways. So finally, applying sort of company reports, the company annual report is seen by some as a form of impression management, something which has rhetoric, persuasion, and the words in that can give some indication of how confident that organisation may feel towards the future. There's been some fascinating studies by Tetlock that studied pessimistic word usage in the Wall Street Journal and identified an association with lower stock market returns the next day. There's been studies of whole industries such as banks, and then also some markers have been identified. So the use of these strong modal verbs or weak modal verbs, relatively high or low levels, may give an indication of weaknesses, internal controls, and also lexical diversity from the psychological literature. When that increases, it can be a marker for concealment of information. So looking at the literature, we identified about 9 different dictionaries, different models, that in some way relate to forward-looking sentiment, uncertainty or pessimism about the future. And in summary, without going into all the details, there were some dictionaries that talked about certainty and about hesitancy, but some of the words were predominantly used in a present or a past sense, whereas we're looking for words that give some indication about the future. Also, where there were categories that were looking at forward-looking sentiment, quite often they didn't differentiate between the intensity, so strong versus a rather weak or hesitant view of that. So it was interesting, you know, could we develop a composite model from what already exists, which outperforms any of the existing literature? And I think just come back to this comment from Berylson that was one of the first to talk about content analysis, which I thought was quite pertinent. The content analysis stands and falls on its categories, and I think that's true of any knowledge organisation system. The changes that can be made, different words in different categories, or even the categories that you create, can have a big impact on what you then subsequently discover. So 3 research questions. Can we create this composite knowledge organisation system, which is an improvement on what already exists? Is there an association between strong attitude towards the future or a hesitant one, and business performance, future business performance? And then finally, do companies in the same industry exhibit different patterns through time in their use of sentiment? And what explanations can we put forward to explain those differences? So I use critical realism as a philosophy as being between positivism, the search for absolute laws, because we're dealing with people and organisations of complex systems. We're talking more tendencies and absolutes. And on the other side, you've got constructivism, description, whereas our research questions are more focused on explanation. So it seemed like a good philosophy. And also having a layered ontology. So from the manifest effects of the word patterns, we're able to postulate what hidden mechanisms and intents may have occurred, which would have created those patterns. So grounded in empiricism, but not constrained by it. So chose 4 similar-sized oil and gas companies. Multinationals, and then for their annual reports from 2008-2015, so that's 8 years of reports, 4 companies, 32 reports. It's all in the public domain, but instead of naming the companies, to focus more on the methods and the findings, I'm just going to use the codes A, B, C and D. Companies A and B had an associated language, and C and D had an associated language. Again, I don't want to mention the actual language because it may give indication of what companies I'm talking about. But I'll talk a little bit more about that later. And this is the dictionary that was created by looking at all the existing dictionaries with a strong category and a hesitant one. So words such as will, shall, must in those reports. And then you have hesitant, might, may, could. We've got semi-modals in there such as have to, need to, as well as just the modal verbs. So that was applied automatically to those 32 reports. And then where we saw some interesting patterns, we also did some inductive analysis of looking, instead of imposing a knowledge organisation system, just look at the word patterns to see if that could help us explain what was going on. So how good was that dictionary as a proxy for forward-looking sentiment? So we recruited five judges through LinkedIn, experienced business and academic professionals, and each was given a random annual company report. So they were asked to identify 30 sentences or statements of strong forward-looking sentiment, 30 sentences of hesitant forward-looking sentiment, and 30 sentences of neither. And so that would be a good way to test how well our dictionary would perform. And I'll talk more about the results a bit later. So then we applied that dictionary automatically to that corpus of, I think in total, I can't remember how many it was, 600,000 unique words, something like that. And then the analytical construct was that an increasing strong hesitant ratio would be an indicator of certainty about the future, confidence. A decreasing ratio would be hesitancy or uncertainty about the future. And then diversity, as you've had an increasing diversity of words within the strong hesitant ratio, could be a marker for concealment of information. And there'll be plenty of graphs. This is the diversity method we use, which is a variation of the Simpson's Diversity Index. And it comes from biological ecology. So the way to think of it is, if you went out into the field and you collected, say, 1,000 insects, and you had 10 classes, and you ended up having 100 insects in each of those 10 classes, you'd have an evenness of 1. So it would be completely diverse. So that's the evenness ratio is what we use, but we just applied it to words within those categories. Looked at recall, probably need to do a little bit more work on this, but we looked at recall as a measure for how the composite compared to the existing models. And then gathered the financial revenue for each of the companies over a 3-year period and worked out a relative percentage. So we could compare how each company was doing against the other three as our business performance measure. So we would look at the patterns 1 year, and then we'd look at the business performance, the subsequent business performance, to see if there was any association. And then used abductive inference to the best explanation, also looking at news archives and the media to try and understand what may have caused some of these elements. So before going to the results, just a couple of limitations. We assume the monosemic use of the word, so that's single meaning. Now, modal verbs have more than one meaning. So if I use the word may, that could be used in a epistemic possibility sense, you know. On the other hand, may could be, you know, may I use your report? So it could be used in a deontic permission sense. However, there's been quite a bit of research of technical and formal reports saying that deontic use of modal verbs is virtually absent to support us using a rather simplistic single meaning rather than doing any disambiguation for this exploratory study. We also use some concepts. I've already mentioned the semi-modals, but also catered for negation. So if I take the word possible, which has a sort of hesitancy about it, if I put the word not in front of it, you've changed it into something that's quite certain. On the other hand, if you have the word will, which is quite certain, and then you add the word not after, you haven't actually changed the certainty. So we included some of those rules for negation based on their impact from the literature, noting there'll still be limitations of this rather simplistic approach of just using the single meaning. And obviously with only a sample size of 4 companies, we can't really do any statistical generalisation, but we can, as in all case studies, look at the generalisation of those resulting theoretical propositions. Okay, so these are results. What we've got here is our strong forward-looking sentiment category and then the hesitant, and then those are the 5 judges. So recall, to give an example, for a judge that has identified 30 sentences of strong forward-looking sentiment, a recall of 1 is if you found every single one of those 30. Precision is how many of the items you found are in fact what you were looking for. So if you found 30 and you only found 30 and they were all correct, you could have a precision of 1. If you found 60 but you found everything that you needed to, your precision would be 0.5 because you've got 30 false positives in your area. And F1 is just a harmonic mean of precision and recall. So it gives you a measure of accuracy. So we have 0.77 overall for forward-looking sentiment and 0.73 for hesitancy. Now, there's been quite a few studies that 2 people will only agree on sentiment about 80% of the time. So we are judging this against humans. Some classification studies are certainly less than those sort of percentages. So it's deemed a reasonable proxy dictionary for, from a validation point of view, for judging strong, hesitant, forward-looking sentiment. So the question about whether it performs better than the models in the literature, again, it's an exploratory study, but from a recall point of view, it's a 21% improvement for strong forward-looking sentiment from the median of the literature and 28% for hesitant. So it needs to do a little bit more work, but it looks promising that improvements could be made on any single dictionary or model that, that exists in the literature. And there's some interesting ones. Mutalu et al. Remove modal verbs such as could and may, because they made an assumption they're only used in a legal sense. That's clearly not the case for a company annual report supported by the views and statements that were identified by some of our judges. So that could be a contradiction, could present an area for further further research. So what we have here is for each of the companies. So company A is always yellow, company B always green, company C is always black, and company D is always red here. So we've got here our diversity ratio, so our strong versus hesitant. So as that's going up, you're getting an increase in diversity of the sentiment. And then in the bar chart, you've got the relative performance of that company compared to the other three. So we can see, for example, here, company D is one of the top performing by the time we get to 2014-2015, whereas we can see here, company C was actually doing relatively well there. So you see the sort of change, and we're looking at the diversity of the report compared to its performance of the following year. So there are no correlations for frequency, but for the diversity, for company C, we get this moderate association. So as it appears to be doing worse, its diversity is going up through time. So back to the question, is there an association? There's certainly nothing that's law-like amongst all companies, but there does appear to be an example there for company C, which I'll sort of come back to. So as its diversity is increasing, its business performance relatively the following year is decreasing. Now what we have, I'm going to overlay them, is, again, 2008-2015, our frequency here, strong verbs divided by hesitant. So for company A, you can see that through time, it's got an R squared here, almost 0.8, so quite a strong correlation of increasing uncertainty about the future. If I had company B, you see a similar sort of pattern. Company C in black has a much stronger level of talking about confidence, strong words about the future, but no particular correlations. And then company D, much lower, much more conservative in the language, with no correlations there through time. If I add on the diversity over time, in dotted line for yellow, that's company A. Again, not any particular correlation there for company B. Then you see for company C there in black, an R squared there 0.83. So over time, its diversity is increasing. And I'll just pop in company D there. And this is just overlaid its relative business performance. So in 2008, companies A and B were best performing relative to the revenue change compared to C and D. And then by the time we get over here, company D is performing the best, company C the lowest of the four. So this is this tying external data to that. So this is mentions of the future. So this is where future is mentioned, or in an annual report, say 2008, you'd have a mention of 2009. So similar for companies A, C and D, yellow, black and red. You can see there a big kick up for company B in green around 2010 to that 2011 increase in frequency of mentioning that. So wanted to look inductively about what other words, you know, what's causing that, what other words are increasing there. And the one that really stood out was lessons and learnings. So you could see from 2009, a big increase here in talking about lessons and learning in 2010. You see it sort of tailing off. Just before mentionings of the future, it didn't peak until about 2012. So it was interesting, what could be causing these sorts of patterns? So in the literature, 2010, this company had a major catastrophic disaster, crisis, shall we say. So what we're looking at with that industrial disaster, again, borrowing, as in critical realism, what theories may support a possible explanation using the literature as a sort of third form of comparative analysis, it does appear to be, after a crisis, this rhetorical framework to want to talk about the future, to move the conversation on about future directions. And there's a theory called Discourse of Renewal Theory, or DRT, by Ulmer, Selnow and Seeger, that talk about, after a crisis, an organisation needing to talk about the learnings to gain stakeholder support, and then talking about the future as a prospective vision. And these word patterns support this theory. You've got this initial peak here about learnings beginning to tail off, and then you've got this talking about the future. And a lot of these patterns, they haven't actually come back to pre-crisis levels that may show the significance of the of that crisis. So in summary, in terms of the word patterns, you see companies A and B that decreasing uncertainty about the future. One explanation could be that 2007, 2008, you had the global financial crisis. Although oil prices picked up again, between 2012 and 2015, they more than halved. So what you might be seeing is some evidence in the annual reports of some accurate forecasting, which is relayed in the company reports. There's some evidence of a reaction to an organisational crisis based on the patterns that we observe. And also, Company C, you remember, it's right at the top. It's got the most confident language about the future, even though it's the worst performing of the four by the time we get to 2015. You also see there's that association between increasing diversity, which could be a marker for concealment. So it's postulated the best explanation is that Company C is exhibiting the Pollyanna effect, which is what Hildebrandt and Snyder described as over-positive rhetoric based on its business performance. So I had a little stab at a preliminary model. Obviously, there's only four companies, but got diversity along this axis and then frequency along the y-axis. So we've got Company D, the size of the bubble is its performance by the time we reach the end of the time period. Almost academic, perhaps conservative in its language. You know, performing quite well, but quite conservative with the language it uses. A and B, quite centralist, almost tied together in a lot of the patterns, these two companies, which do share that same associated language. And then in the top right, Pollyanna. So high diversity, quite high frequency of this sort of positive language, but actually performing not as well compared to its peers in this sample. And in postulating that there could be an assertives group, but there's no evidence from this study to highlight that. So final slide, in conclusion, I'm not aware of any studies that have used diversity, biologically inspired diversity, within the same category and found an association with decreasing business performance. So that might be an area for further research. Using these dictionaries is not a new technique. So automatic dictionaries applied to text has been used for some time, but with the advent of big data, with the so-called post-truth society, it may be an increasingly useful technique to apply to all forms of text. And you know, one of the philosophical ways of perhaps looking at some of these patterns is it allows you to take a text and then represent it, which could facilitate the development of a narrative which is non-obvious. It wouldn't be one that you necessarily have just reading through the reports, even if you could. And a final point, having worked a lot with enterprise search deployments inside companies where they're trying to recreate the Google experience, sentiments, if we could embed some sentiment algorithms as standard into some enterprise search technologies, then you can imagine that people might discover unexpected patterns that they didn't set out to find. So normally you only do sentiment analysis when you have a hypothesis in mind. So this study is a specific example of that. But I think if you could visualise it, you know, maybe in a web part in the corner of the screen or something, it might highlight something that someone never set out to locate, but the sentiment has picked it up, which could lead to some interesting potential insights. So that's all I have. Thank you for listening.